Hey, it's Steve and Dave again. We are two guys in a river. I'm Steve Mathewson.
And I'm Dave Getz.
No doubt we all want to catch more fish. I want to, and Dave needs to.
Ooh, that hurts.
But we're all about fly fishing and our love for the outdoors, so let's get after it. There's something about the beauty of a high mountain lake that I find mesmerizing. Whether it's a lake that sits above timberline, or whether it's a lake surrounded by tall spruce or pine or fir trees. Wow, we've had some great experiences in high mountain lakes in the West, Colorado and Montana especially. But the fact is, Dave, we fish rivers and streams more than we fish lakes. Why don't we do more fishing in high mountain lakes if they're so great?
Accessibility and time. I think those are the two reasons. And we also live in Chicago, right?
Yeah, so true.
Not a lot of high mountain lakes here in the area or in the Driftless region. So, accessibility and time, I think, are the two main reasons. You often have to hike. We will often hike 2 to 3 miles when we're on a river. But if you're fishing a high mountain lake, that's a minimum typically.
Yes, right.
And so, and it's all elevation gain. So as we're getting older, we're probably less motivated for the elevation gain. And if you're going to fish a lake that's 5 miles in, you either have to go on horseback or you have to make a backpack trip out of it.
Absolutely. It's a much bigger undertaking.
It really is. Weather is always a factor. Man, I would say even more than Montana, Colorado's weather is so mercurial at those high elevations.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, at the end of the day, with accountability and time, just the planning for a hike and fish is simply more complex.
Yeah, very true. And if you do fish a high mountain lake, I mean, they're different animals, aren't they?
They sure are.
They act differently than rivers or streams, so it requires a different set of tactics. And that's what we want to talk about today. If you're going to fish a high mountain lake, chances are you're doing it in the summer, when it's accessible. So today we're going to talk about some important tactics for fishing high mountain lakes. What have we learned over the years, Dave?
So the first is something that actually is probably actually a stream tactic too. So in that sense, this probably isn't all that different than fishing a stream. But I recently watched an Orvis video about fishing muddy water. So as a guide, the river was, I wouldn't say it was like completely chocolate milk, but it was off color, and it was more than just a little off color.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the first things the guide reminded us was about casting right where you plan to step into the river, right? And he said often they'll sit on the edges here, so especially when you're fishing muddy water, that you don't want to just step into the water. You want to like almost sneak up to the place where you're going to put in and cast right there. And the parallel is true with lakes. So the best fishing is not necessarily in the middle of the lake unless you're, you know, you can take a tube with you, a floating tube with you. So you just can't fish the middle of these high mountain lakes because you don't have the gear to do it. So the fish are along the bank, and if it's too shallow, of course, you might have to wade out a bit. But in general, it's not about casting out into the middle of the lake.
Right. So fish what's right in front of you.
Fish what's right in front of you. That's right.
Yeah, and if it is too shallow, you might have to wade out a bit, but don't assume that you have to wade. I fish a lake in Rocky Mountain National Park where I wade out until it's just over my knees, and then there's a drop off, and it's good fishing right there, but it's still that same principle. Yeah, you don't have to, you know, make a super long cast. And you know, the closer you are to the middle, the better it's going to be. There's a lot of good fishing right along the edge. Now, one of the challenges with that is if there are trees surrounding the lake, and maybe that's one reason why I like lakes above timberline.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. You know, I fish one a lake up in the Collegiate Peaks in Colorado. In fact, I'm thinking about going to fish it actually in late August. I'm not sure. I've fished it many, many times in the past, and I'm always amazed at, one, how hard it is to get up there, but also how often the fish are right next to the edge of the lake, right? So, and you can walk out quite a ways before it drops off, and it's not, again, this lake is probably one city block,
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. It's not a huge lake. Sits right beneath the timberline. So you can cast, you know, as poorly as you want to.
Yeah.
But the fish are sitting up against the bank. So it's really important to know that they cruise the shoreline, and at least in some lakes, many lakes. And if there are trees, then you have to get out far enough and then cast to the sides, right? That's how you fish those lakes that have a lot of trees. So.
All right, so that's the first strategy. Fish what's right in front of you. A second strategy is to fish the outlet, especially, and sometimes the inlet. Man, I have caught some beautiful trout in the outlet to Upper Two Medicine Lake and Glacier National Park. And then there's a couple of lakes I won't mention in Rocky Mountain National Park because they're too popular. By the way, if you go to Upper Two Medicine Lake, just make sure you've got bear spray because it's grizzly country. But I've had some success in those, in those outlets. I mean, you're back to stream fishing. Maybe that's the lure for us. Is we love that moving water.
Yeah, you know, there's nothing like moving
rivers
water.
And streams. So man, you take us to a lake, and 5 minutes later, I'm at the outlet of that.
And I would argue that's probably the first place you should fish.
Yeah,
I mean, it's the first place you and I fish.
Right, because often it gets overlooked, doesn't it? If it's a really big lake and people know, if there's a dam involved or something and, spillway. But if it's just an ordinary outlet, a lot of people are in the lake and they may be ignoring that. And, those outlets are good. And inlets are a source of food. So, don't overlook those.
Another principle here is to fish under and on the surface. So both. So I think when you're thinking about a high mountain lake in summer, the first thing I think about is dry fly fishing, right? I want to catch them on the surface. And that's true. And if I can catch it on the surface, catch a fish on the surface, I'll do that. But don't overlook fishing streamers or even a nymph, right? And or fishing a dropper if you're using a dry fly. I've caught a lot of fish up in a high mountain lake where you had a top fly and then you caught it on a, maybe I was dropping a zebra midge or something like that. So fish both on the surface and under the surface, and don't just, if they're not rising, then give up.
Yeah, I agree. And when you're stripping a streamer, why not have a dropper, some kind of an emerger pattern. I mean, a zebra midge, something like that can work great. And it doesn't have to be technically an emerger pattern, but if it's some kind of nymph, you're pulling that up. It's going to look like something coming to the surface, and so you could do something like that on its own, like that shaky Beely fly that we like to use could work.
Soft tackle,
right. But it's when you're stripping a streamer. Don't forget about something, on the end of it that's going to look like a nymph or something that's
I will try all sorts of things. I'm always willing. I mean, you can put a San Juan worm on the end of a streamer.
Yeah.
Depend on what kind of purist you are. If you're a purist dry fly fisher like your brother, he only dry fly fishes.
Yeah.
So if you're fishing these lakes and nothing's rising to your fly, then gosh, start fishing beneath the surface.
Another important strategy or tactic is to use the right rod and line. And if you're new to fly fishing lakes, in general, a longer rod is better for longer casts. And there is something about making longer casts. Again, you don't have to try to reach the middle of the lake, but sometimes getting it out there further is important, especially if you're going to allow your line to sink. You want it to get out a little further because as it sinks, it's actually going to move toward you. So take your 9-foot rod. This is not the place for your 8.5-foot 4-weight or your 7-foot 3-weight.
My 7.5-foot 3-weight.
Exactly. Yeah, take that 9-foot rod, and if you have a 10-foot rod, take that. And by the way, a 9-foot rod, it'll still work fine on the outlet or the inlet. Take another reel with sink tip line. I think sink tip line is a must in a deep lake. Yeah, you could try to use split shot, but sink tip will get you down quicker. And what I like to do is, yeah, I have that extra reel, or sometimes I've even done an extra spool, but an extra reel is better because you can switch out quicker, and then you can switch between, you know, dry fly fishing and you want to strip a streamer, I would do that. You know, you might be able to take a rod outfitted with a sink tip and one with regular line. You know, for us, regular line is weight forward, so that you can switch quickly between fishing under the surface and fishing dries. I mean, in some lakes, that those hatches can happen pretty quickly.
Yeah, they really can.
I mean, my experience on Highlight Reservoir above Bozeman, I used to float tube that with a friend, and we'd have a rod rigged up and, you know, kind of lashed the side of our float tube. And there were times where, you know, we're stripping streamers, and all of a sudden they just start rising, and we would switch rods quickly. So I think that's an option.
You can take two rods if, you know, if your lake is the destination.
Yeah,
and you're not
yeah.
fishing a long stretch of the outlet along the way. It's yeah. really hard to manage two rods if you're hiking.
Oh, yeah, it
you know?
Is.
So unless, and it probably depends on how far. If you're only hiking in a mile or so, that's one thing. But, man, if you're hiking up in, like, Rocky Mountain National Park or some of the lakes, like the one lake that I like to fish in, the Collegiate, I mean, gosh, it takes a good hard 3.5 hours to get
yeah,
there.
Yeah, right.
And so taking two rods just is, you know,
yeah,
no,
unless
an extra
you're
reel
lashing
is
them
easy.
To a pack frame or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You
yeah,
can do
yeah.
that.
Yeah, you could. It just feels right. like, you know, with all the water that you need
oh,
for
yeah.
a day hike.
Yeah.
Because we go up, we'll leave at 6 o'clock at you know,
yep.
the trailhead,
mm-hmm.
we'll leave. Get there about 9:30, fish until about 2,
mm-hmm.
and then hike back. So it's a really long day.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So extra weight and extra. So you're trying to maximize the amount of water you take and limit your gear.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
No, that makes sense. And I mentioned float tubing a couple moments ago. I suppose I should talk about that. That can be an option. Again, though, you've got to get a float tube up to a lake. You know, who wants to do that? Although I do remember a ranger, park ranger in Rocky Mountain National Park, who would haul a float tube up to a lake that was a couple miles up above Bear Lake, and he liked to fish in the evening, so he just carried the float tube up. Problem is you also have to take waders, and because those lakes are cold, and you're not going to, you know, have the bottom half of your body submerged in a frigid lake for a couple of hours, so... yeah, between your waders and your boots and the flippers that go with that, it's usually not the greatest thing. But if you can do it and if the fishing is that much better, if you really do need to get out a little bit further, yeah, that could be an option.
So we never when I fish this lake. In the Collegiates,
yeah.
never take waders.
Yeah,
we never
right.
do
yeah.
because one, no. we're not taking a flotation tube,
yep.
and one, it's just too much work. But there's just a lot of good fishing on the shore.
Yeah,
right.
Have you ever wet waded out
yeah,
a little
absolutely.
Bit?
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, so you
yeah.
can do that.
And it's
That's,
cold. Yeah,
right.
I mean you're above
you
timberline.
Right, but it, you know your knees or up to your thighs or something, you can handle that for
yeah.
a little bit.
But if you're going above your torso or above
yeah.
your waist.
Right.
And so your whole bottom is
and
wet.
You, yeah. And you can't really pull out of that quickly.
Yeah. No.
No.
Yeah. So you do have to you're making a judgment call. You and I have kind of a rule that once May 1st hits, we tend not to wear waders
right.
at all.
No. No. We'll wear wading boots and sometimes, yeah, the neoprene wading socks, which keeps a little bit more water out, but never completely, because
no.
we usually wade over our socks.
Over the top, yeah.
But hey, if it's 80 degrees, then
right.
it's not
it
a big
matter.
Deal.
Yeah, so yeah. wading actually is, you have to really wrestle with that and what you're willing to carry up
yeah.
to these lakes, yeah.
All right, so we've said fish what's in front of you, that's important. Secondly, fish the outlet and the inlet. Third, fish under and on the surface. You want to make sure you cover both places. Fourth, use the right rod and line. What's another one, Dave?
So this is patently obvious, but you have to say it, is be prepared for weather. And this
oh,
thing,
man, that's so
if
important.
You're in the Midwest, or you're from the east. I'm sure in the, you know, in the Adirondacks and the different mountains that the weather changes fast up on some of those ridges. But man, in Colorado, I am so amazed, especially Colorado, how quickly things turn.
Oh, it does. And it usually rains every afternoon.
Yes, you know, that's right.
Wake up, there's not a cloud in the sky, but it always clouds up in the afternoon. You'll get a rain shower.
And sometimes I remember being out in Montana on a high mountain lake where it went from, well, no, we were fishing the Bighorn, remember?
Yes.
It went from like 85 degrees to like 55.
Yes.
I mean, it had dropped that fast in about an hour.
Yeah.
And oh my gosh, we were actually floating the river that time.
Yeah.
So yeah, in a high mountain lake, it's so, the weather is, the only word is mercurial, up and down. And when those squalls come in, they come in hard and fast.
Yeah, they do.
And the temp can just go fall off a cliff. So it's so, so important. So some rain gear, I think you should pack a light jacket, not a jacket, but a piece of rain gear. Right?
Yeah.
Or at least it's
good rain jacket.
Yeah,
of some
good rain
kind,
jacket. And, yeah.
And, you know, if you don't take rain pants, that's fine. As long as you have nylon pants or shorts, you know, something like that, always change the socks. But if you're above tree line, the one thing here is, man, head down at the first threat of weather. You don't want to be exposed to lightning or hail above tree line. I remember a few years ago in Rocky Mountain National Park, my brothers and I were fishing a couple of lakes that were right at tree line, just above them, and you know, we fished them. We got down below tree line, and a storm moved in really quick, and we got pelted with hail. I mean, marble-sized hail, and we were fine because we took refuge under a couple of big pine trees, but I thought, man, if we would have, of course, that's another story, you know, with lightning, but we were in thick timber, so there was no choice. But that really shielded us from that hail.
Wow.
I thought, man, a half hour earlier, if we were out in that open, you know, area around the lake, that would have been difficult to get pelted with that stuff.
I don't think I remember you telling me that story.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it was, it came up quick, and you know, the ground's full of white marbles, and then 10 minutes later, it's done and the sun's out.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it is totally crazy. So the other thing, the corollary to all that in terms of being prepared for weather is just to take plenty of water.
You know, just
take more than what you think.
Oh, so
you don't
want
to be conserving water on the way back down, and you're just dry and you're tired and you have no water left. You take the last few sips, and you still have a mile and a half or 2 miles to go. So take plenty of water. And then the final thing, Steve, is what?
Well, sticking on weather for a minute, remember, too, that your graphite fly rod is literally a lightning rod.
Yeah.
So, man, you got to be really careful. I just, you know, the more I'm around, the more I respect and even fear weather in, you know, in the West. It's in the mountains, it can be so volatile, so be careful.
Yeah, so basically, if it does, and you are above timberline or even in the timber, you know, lay that thing down and walk away from it. I mean, and take cover, but don't take your fly rod with you. Don't be holding your fly rod.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. Yeah, so finally, do your homework. Get good intel. And I know we say this a lot, but it really is a must. Don't try a new lake unless you have spent some time doing some research. And by research, it can be informal. I mean, you're reading articles online, or maybe you've got a book that you're reading about fly fishing a certain region. So do that. Listen to people in fly shops. You know, sometimes just going in and hanging around, I think we've made an art out of that.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of know when people are coming in and they're asking questions. Hey, I'm thinking about going to this spot. I'm going to that spot. You know, just make sure you're looking at the reels in the case right by that conversation. And you do. You pick up a lot of information. You know, fly fisher friends. I've got a couple of pages of recommendations from friends that have been, especially in Colorado, that say, you got to try this lake, and yeah, well, tell me about it. And so I go home and I, you know, scribble down some notes or open up my laptop and in a file take notes on that. And it really does, it really pays off. I remember a few years ago fishing a high mountain lake in Colorado, and, you know, guy said, here are the places you want to fish. And sure enough, we went up there, and he had said, you know, the wind kind of blows from this side to that side, and you want to stand on that side because it seems like there's, you know, there's more feed over there, and there's a channel, a pretty big channel there, you know, a drop off. And so, man, it saved us a lot of time.
Yeah. So I remember one time, well, one of the, gosh, I had fished this high mountain lake in Colorado in the Collegiate. I talked about that before, many years prior to that. And it had done so many times, caught a lot of fish. I think they're cutthroat. What are they? West Slope cutthroat? I don't know what they are up there. But
yeah.
And so I went to the fly shop, said, hey, I'm hiking up and going to, it's about 3-4 miles in. I'm going to fish this lake, but the timberline, what should I fish? He goes, use stimulators. And he's pointed to a couple that he had there. So I bought like 5 or 6. Sure enough, we get up there. I had a friend that I went with on that time. We went up there and there were some black bugs that were out. And so I tried to tie on something that was tiny and black. There was a hatch going on. They weren't midges, but they were these tiny black flies. I didn't catch anything.
Were the fish rising for them?
No, they weren't. But... So the guy said the stimulator was going to work. So yeah. I tied that on. Sure enough, they would it functioned like an attractor pattern.
Wow.
And we had good fishing for the rest of the day. Now, they started to rise a little bit for different things, but that stimulator worked all afternoon.
Man.
So, again, and he said, and this is what he said, which was so interesting. He said there's these, what he called, anabatic winds that actually blow up insects onto these high mountain lakes.
Huh.
And yeah. They come from these winds from below.
Okay.
Which is so interesting to me.
Yeah.
So the anabatic winds. So big thing, hey, talk to your fly shop and just bald face, ask the person, the fly shop guy or woman, whoever is there, just ask them what you need. And I think the biggest failure in fly fishing can be the failure to ask for advice.
Oh, it is. So what kind of things are we talking about? I mean, we're talking about, we've identified, we want to know what patterns work. What techniques might work best.
Time of day that might work best.
Time of day is critical. You know, some lakes seem to fish really well early morning, and others need a little bit of time maybe to, you know, warm up, get the sun on the water. So time of day. Yeah, are there any currents or deep spots, or like you said, that the wind patterns that would affect the fishing, whether that's for better or for worse?
Well, in one you said, which was related, was which side of the lake to stand on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, based on, I mean, you could spend a whole day there, be on the wrong side of the lake, catch nothing.
Yeah.
If you had that bit of information, and I don't know, it just would save you a lot of time.
Yeah. Yeah. The more prepared you are, the better chance you'll have at having a better day.
And I just think that fishing and fly fishing these high mountain lakes, it's just, to me, it's more work. It's more complex because you have to then take water. Mm-hmm. You have to take usually a backpack. We're getting older, and it requires some effort to get there. The elevation gain we talk about. So it just takes a little bit more thoughtfulness, I think, to fish these high mountain lakes.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there you have it. We don't always fish lakes, but when we do, we try to put ourselves in the best position we can to
what
catch
commercial
fish.
Was that?
Isn't that the Dos Equis
commercial? Yes, the Dos Equis. We don't always fish lakes.
Yeah, now every third meme I see on Facebook or Instagram is that. Are there memes on Instagram? Anyway, that's not the point. So, yeah, we don't always fish lakes. When we do, we try to put ourselves in the best position we can to catch fish. And since we've told you everything that we know about fishing lakes and even more, we'll call that a day.
Yes, we will.
But hey, we do want to hear about your tactics, right, Dave?
Yeah, absolutely. So go to our website, twoguysinariver.com. That's with the numeral 2. Add your ideas in the comment section under this particular post about this episode. We'd love to hear you opine and actually train us on how you attack a high mountain lake.
You know, I was thinking about this. I don't remember. I didn't look at it, but did we put anything in our book about fishing lakes?
I don't remember.
Yeah.
What book was that?
Yeah. Oh, hey, yeah. Nicely done, Dave. Yeah. Fly Fisher's Book of Lists.
Life is short, catch more fish. That's
right. Yeah, that's... I think I'm going to go back and reread that,
yeah,
Dave.
We should go back and reread our book. I do think we did put some little hacks in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can buy it on Amazon if you want. The Fly Fisher's Book of Lists, Life is Short, Catch More Fish.
There you go. Well, that's all for today. Hey, thanks again for listening. I'm Steve Mathewson.
I'm Dave Goetz.
Until next time, we are two guys in a river.
For the love of fly fishing.
Lakes.